KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
35 fleet flown by crews, including those at Fairchild, for the past 50 years. Lighting and security are being improved at a cruise ship dock at Port Townsend, where vandals cut mooring lines last week. Police say a total of 5 lines were cut on 2 different nights, causing damage estimated at more than $1,000. Police Chief Connor Daly tells the Peninsula Daily News investigators are looking at several possible suspects. The American Cruise Line ship holds about 100 passengers. It's making 13 weekly Puget Sound cruises this season. Washington state residents are now legally protected from having to hand over personal social media passwords to their employers or for job interviews. Governor Jay Inslee signed the bill Tuesday, making Washington the 5th state this year to sign such a bill into law. Privacy advocates and business lobbyists are worried the new law would compromise security for proprietary or confidential company information and bars employers from asking for Facebook, Twitter, or other social media personal passwords during a job interview or at the workplace. But the bill does allow companies to request content of employees' social media sites during internal investigations, which can be opened if an employer has received a tip that a worker may be leaking information. That measure was sponsored by Democrat Senator Steve Hobbs of Lake Stevens. I'm Lisa Brooks, KUOW News.
Support comes from the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to a vigorous presence for poetry in American culture. PoetryFoundation.org. 48 degrees in Seattle's University District, expecting a high today near 58, showers likely, possibly a thunderstorm this afternoon. Tonight's low temperature around 47 with showers likely and wind 7 to 13 miles an hour. On Thursday, the high right around 60, mostly cloudy with a 50-50 chance of showers.
From 94.9 KUOW, this is Weekday. I'm Marcy Silman. Microsoft unveiled its new Xbox One yesterday. Later this hour, GeekWire co-founder Todd Bishop will join us with details on that story and more in the world of technology. We'll also hear about the latest offering in the long-running Star Trek series. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper lost his top advisor this week. Joining us with details on this and other news from Canada, our regular Wednesday guest, Vancouver Sun political writer Vaughn Palmer. Good morning, Vaughn.
Good morning, Marcy. And can I just start by saying on behalf of all Canadians, I'm really, really embarrassed by what's going on up here. You got the Prime Minister's office embroiled in a scandal, the Canadian Senate in disgrace, and the Mayor of Toronto.
You want to talk about that first?
Well, it was on Jon Stewart last night,
yes,
right?
Yes, it was.
And so the Mayor of Toronto is accused of, well, there's an allegation that he was caught on video with a bunch of drug dealers smoking crack cocaine.
Right.
Now, I guess I should start off by saying that for Canadians, the city of Toronto is about as straight-laced and upstanding a community as we can all imagine.
Hmm.
The idea that the mayor of all places, Toronto, would be accused of smoking crack cocaine with a bunch of drug dealers is, well, I guess is as unimaginable as it might be to Americans that if a branch of the IRS went rogue, it would be the one in Cincinnati. You know, you might say Chicago, New Orleans, maybe, but anyway. But Canada seems to have gone all the way to New Jersey without, you know, stopping off in any kind of the in-between way stations. Province of Quebec, by the way, is embroiled in a huge corruption scandal, too, with municipal officials accused of taking money under the table from organized crime. So we're kind of in a kind of under a cloud up here at the moment, and I just want to apologize for it.
Right.
Delighted that Jon Stewart's getting so much material.
Well, let me ask you something about the Mayor of Toronto scandal, because it's now the videotape itself that is sort of the subject of, you know, the Toronto Star reporters want to buy the tape from some shadowy characters. Gawker has so far, they started a crack starter campaign.
Yes.
You know, people are now vying to buy the tape.
Okay, so the Mayor of Toronto is what we might call a colorful character, and he's been embroiled in a bunch of scandals and controversies over the years. And a while ago, the country's leading newspaper, the Toronto Star, gets contacted by these people who, as I say, they're self-confessed drug dealers, and they've got this video of the mayor smoking crack cocaine with them, is what they say they have, right? And as you might imagine, the news organizations went, oh, come on, you know, like, you're going to accuse the mayor of something, like, accuse him of knocking over a bank or, you know, you're not, come on, crack cocaine? Anyway, they're shopping this video around, and they say they want $100,000 for it. Well, you know, a reputable news organization is not going to pay $100,000 for that, so they tell them to no. But they do go. They do send two of their reporters to go and watch it. And the reporters have been interviewed. These are very skilled, professional, reputable reporters who are careful, and they both say the mayor has got some explaining to do. What he's doing in the video looks awfully suspicious and should be explained.
And they say it is the mayor.
It might have been, his, as John Stewart said, it might have been his asthma medicine that he's taking, right? But it looks suspicious, especially given who he's hanging out with. The Star sat on the story until the group shopped it around to Gawker. And then it gets on the internet, and everybody goes, well, wait a minute, Canadians are looking at this thing. Gawker has started to raise money for to buy the thing. The people that are shopping it have now doubled the price. So this is kind of a sideshow as well. The Star then reported the story. And what the news media in Toronto have said is the mayor has got some explaining to do. That's really all they've said. The other problem for the mayor, Rob Ford, is that his denials have not been all that great. He said they're ridiculous and they're typical of the Toronto Star's vendetta against him. Well, again, if the Toronto Star were going to concoct a video accusing the mayor of something, as I said, they might have gone with something a little more plausible than this. It's not, I mean, videos can be faked. We know that. But that's not what the mayor and his lawyer are saying. They're not saying, that's not my face. That's pasted on somebody else's body. They're not saying, they're saying it's ridiculous. They're not saying, come on, I don't even know these guys, right? It's fake. So it's created a controversy about the mayor's judgment and conduct around how he's dealt with this thing. And, of course, it has also embarrassed greatly the city of Toronto. The nickname for Toronto for much of Canada's history has been Toronto the Good. It was it was a city that prided itself on its rectitude and good behavior and clean streets. And this is a pretty embarrassing story.
Are you telling me that the mayor of Vancouver smoking crack would be more plausible?
No, the mayor of Vancouver rides his bicycle around town.
Right.
He's, the most that he's ever going to do is get nabbed is speeding on his bike. meanwhile, in the Canadian Senate and the Prime Minister's office, you've got this other scandal. So Canada's Senate is appointed, not elected. And Canadian politicians, successive prime ministers, have used it as a repository for people who've done favors to the governing party. And they're appointed for life, well, until they turn 75. So you've got party supporters get appointed to the Senate, and Canadians kind of regard it as a kind of a pension home for party hacks. One of the rules for the Canadian Senate is you represent a province in Canada. You have to be resident in your home province. Over the years, they've appointed people who pretended to have, they'd have a summer cottage in their province, and they'd commute back and forth. One of them is a guy named McDuffie, who was a TV broadcaster, very prominent broadcaster, was appointed to the Senate, claimed to be a resident of Prince Edward Island, a small province in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, right? And he's got a cottage there, so he commutes back and forth. But Duffy has now been accused of abusing his housing allowance, $90,000 worth of housing claims predicated on a bogus claim, basically, to be a resident of Prince Edward Island. But at the same time, he's claiming this allowance in Ottawa. He gets investigated for abusing his expense accounts, and suddenly he pays the bill, $90,000. Well, it turns out that the Prime Minister's chief of staff wrote a personal check to Duffy to cover the expenses. The Prime Minister's chief of staff, being independently wealthy guy with two law degrees, Nigel Wright. When this came out last week, Wright's had to resign. The investigation of Duffy has been reopened. And the Prime Minister has found himself having to deny that he knew anything about all this. So, you know, first thing first, what kind of person can write a personal check to a friend for $90,000, for starters? And second of all, why would you do that when the guy is under investigation. And a third point, I guess, is why the cover-up? It only came out this past week, so this has really caused a big mess for the Prime Minister, for his appointments. Canadians, when they're not being embarrassed by the Mayor of Toronto or being embarrassed by our Senate, because this is not the only senator mm-hmm. who's been fiddling his expenses, and on the whole, we're all thinking of moving to Iowa.
Well, the other problem, it's not just that it's embarrassing for Mr. Harper, the Prime Minister, but according to some accounts, his government in general, the Conservative government, is sort of in a little morass of directionlessness.
Yeah. I mean, look, you get elected here. I mean, it's not uncommon. You get elected promising to go down there to Ottawa, and you're going to clean things up, right? We're the new broom, and we're going to clean things up. And Harper ran against Ottawa's culture of entitlement. You're going to recognize all this.
Yes.
Culture of entitlement, you know. They're all down there. They're just interested in their pensions and their housing allowances, and we're going to clean all that up. And, of course, Harper's been prime minister since 2006, and now people are going, well, they've lost touch with their base. They've lost touch with what we sent them down there for. And now they're making excuses that sound an awful lot like the excuses that the old bunch used to make.
Now, how can another election be called? Is it the prime minister who calls it?
Yeah, we're 2 years away from an election.
So you're just going to flounder.
These things kind of fade. The Senate of Canada has been an embarrassment for a long time. And there's been some discussion that we would, get rid of it or fix it. Any really serious change in the Senate would require an amendment to the Canadian Constitution. And as compared to the Canadian Constitution, amending the American one is child's play.
Oh, my.
It's very hard to amend the Canadian Constitution. And most Canadian politicians don't even want to talk about it because it requires all sorts of things. So, I guess the government's going to try to ride this scandal out. This guy Duffy, who I mentioned to you, the former TV journalist, mm-hmm. is in the middle of this under investigation. He's quit the government caucus in the Senate. He's sitting as an independent. Another former journalist, Pamela Wallen, has quit the government caucus. She's under investigation for her expenses as well. She's sitting as an independent. So there's four people now in the Senate who are being looked at. But really, the system needs to be cleaned up seriously around this, and public patience is certainly running out.
This is so not what we expect of you Canadians, Vaughn.
I know. We've let everyone down.
You
okay?
have. You're our clean neighbor.
It's like a reality TV show. Stuart was sort of material. He goes, where's the most unlikely place in the world we can find a crack cocaine? A mayor accused of smoking crack cocaine. Let's go to Toronto. No one will believe that. He ran a bunch of clips last night of some of Rob Ford's earlier misdeeds, and he said, hey, look at all these things. You wonder, this guy might be on crack. Well, a funny story. Now, look, it's out there on the Internet, and I don't think you should just report what's out there on the Internet. But at the same time, like the Toronto Star is a very serious publication. Its editors are careful. Its reporters are careful. And there's something here that the mayor of Toronto needs to explain, and I think that's still the responsible public position, is the mayor has to come forward and account for this thing.
Well, what happens?
And explain himself.
What happens if Gawker does raise its $200,000? That tape then goes really viral.
I guess it does, and because they're based in the United States, they're not subject to Canadian libel law, defamation law. Canadian defamation law is much tougher than the law in the United States. The onus of proof is on the person reporting it to prove it's true. We don't have the kind of damage awards they do in the States, but we do have a much tougher court system on this matter. So Canadian media will be careful. They've been careful so far, as I said. I mean, it's being talked about as something the mayor needs to explain. No one's come out and said they think the mayor has anything more than he's just got to explain himself on this. And because he's refused to explain himself, because he's sort of turned it back and said, oh, well, the media's out to get me, you know, I don't think that's flying very well with the citizens of Toronto.
Wow. Well, what an exciting chat we've had today, Vaughn. It sure is a lot more lively than softwood lumber tariffs.
Yeah.
We'll talk with you next week, and perhaps you can top this then.
Look forward to next week.
Thanks, Vaughn.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Vaughn Palmer's a political columnist for the Vancouver Sun, and we talk with him every Wednesday on Weekday on KUOW.
Join KUOW for the 42nd Annual Northwest Folklife Festival, May 24th through 27th at Seattle Center. In addition to music and dance, this year's festival includes a special program about the history and folklore of working in Washington State. Find out more on our events page at KUOW.org.
Support for KUOW comes from Elliott Bay Book Company. Scott C. Johnson explores his father's past and the impact it had on his life in his book, Wolf and the Watchman, A Father, a Son, and the CIA, from W.W. Norton. He discusses on Wednesday, May 22nd at 7 p.m. at Elliott Bay Book Company.
48 degrees in Seattle's University District, cloudy skies. Today's high around 58, showers likely, possibly a thunderstorm this afternoon. Tonight, a low temperature around 47 with showers likely and wind 7 to 13 miles an hour.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
We are heading into the lobby. It's Thursday, and film critic and cultural commentator Robert Horton is with us once again, and the buzz in lobbies around the country, I guess, is that the new Star Trek film opened last week. It is what number of film? Star Trek Into Darkness?
It's, if you're talking about the rebooted Star Trek, it's the second one.
Okay, but how many of the old boot?
Oh, I don't know. Are we up to 9 or so now?
Okay. Well, just to get you all in the mood for Star Trek, hear a little bit of the trailer that hit theaters.
You think you can't make mistakes? But the choices you make could get yourself and everyone under your command killed. But I believe in you, Jim.
Darkness is coming.
This could just be the beginning.
Beginning of what?
All-out war.
Darkness is coming. I don't know if that has anything to do with the film, because I haven't seen it. But you have.
I have seen it. That was your friend Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yes, I am. I can't say it on the air, but he is, ever since I started following him on the PBS series Sherlock, I just think he's great. He plays the villain, right?
He does play the villain. And the movie is not does not go as into darkness as that trailer suggests.
Okay.
I don't know why they want it to seem so ominous. It's actually just more like a Star Trek episode.
Well, maybe it's to sort of hook in people who are not already fans of Star Trek.
That may be. And that raises an interesting point.
Yes. The point is that, as I understand it, there's so much backstory that you actually have to be a Trekkie.
It's funny because it's not even that there's so much information or backstory that you would need to know. It's that the movie seems to be constructed in such a way to only please people who will already understand all the inside jokes. It's not even specific references to events or things like that. It's the catchphrases that you know that Scotty says, and it's the way that Dr. McCoy is going to look at Spock. And it's one thing after another of that. And if you've been watching this show for almost 50 years now,
yes,
it's kind of hard to believe, then you will get all that and you will probably derive pleasure from it. But it's a really weird movie to watch because that's almost the entirety of it.
Okay, so Star Trek fans, we shout out to you, or maybe non-fans. Maybe you went to see this because you love Benedict Cumberbatch, like me. 206-543-5869 is our phone number, 206-543-KUOW, 1-800-289-5869, or email us weekday at KUOW.org. Star Trek maybe is the longest franchise, but not the only one that is rebooted and on the run this summer. I happened to see Iron Man 3 over the weekend, and as you're talking about having to, you know, the backstory, watching this movie, you had to have a backstory of not even Iron Man 2, but of an Avengers film, which was, I don't know when that film ran, because they started referring to things. That if you haven't even seen these Iron Man movies, you have no idea.
No. And that's they've created their little universe out of those Marvel superheroes. And I just saw the movie that's opening on Friday is The Hangover 3, which takes you back to events in the first Hangover. And you need to know that because that's significant.
What's the assumption in Hollywood?
Well, I think the assumption is actually that someday they will all be in the same boxed set of DVDs and people just sit down and they marathon through them, and it's really, really fun. It's an odd, I mean, this goes back to the way the Lord of the Rings did it and the way the Harry Potter movies also did it. Just the assumption that you've already seen it, you're not coming in cold.
Well, in fact, since you mentioned the Lord of the Rings, a caller said we shouldn't spoil the movie. We will not spoil the movie. Okay. We just want to know more, so whether you are longtime followers or people who jump in are totally lost. So, what you think about all these, they're franchises. They're not even serials to sequels. These are franchises.
Yeah, and here's the distinction between, let's say, the Lord of the Rings films and what I'm talking about in this Star Trek thing. The Lord of the Rings films, okay, it is a complete story spread out over three films.
And at the beginning of these, they recap a bit, because the first film recaps The Hobbit in it for an hour. There's the backstory before they even start.
Yeah.
I happen to have seen Lord of the Rings films many times. So those ones I know, but I...
In the Star Trek thing, this latest part two of the rebooted Star Trek, the thing is, it's not even that you are continuing a story and this is another chapter. This is a whole new episode, just like the old series was. It's more that there is now a Star Trek universe, and it floats out there above all of the TV series and all of the sequels and all of the ancillary things and comic book conventions and everything. And this movie continually hits these beats that will be recognized and perhaps produce delight in everybody who knows that stuff. And it's really, for a while, it's kind of interesting to watch. And then you think, is there even a movie happening around all of this referencing?
Well, Becca just emailed in to weekday@kuow.org and says, I'm new to Star Trek. I saw the first reboot, and I've seen a few of the newer TV episodes. None of the original show. I loved the new movie, and I laughed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a spoiler alert.
No, it's funny.
It's funny.
As the old show was. I liked the first film that came out, I think it was in 2009, with Chris Pine is the actor who plays Kirk, and Zachary Quinto, this very interesting actor who plays Spock.
Who look a lot like the young versions of the original
characters.
Yeah,
that's one of the things that's funny about it. It's a little secondhand about it. But they did a nice job, in part maybe because they were doing the whole origin story, and so you were seeing the young people and how they got their jobs on the Starship Enterprise and all that stuff. And that worked really well, and it was funny and it was playful and referred back. But this one now they're kind of on their own, and it's just weird. It's this cascade of catchphrases and references that is taking us into some new. I'm not even sure it's a movie anymore.
Well, I mean, maybe that's okay that there are these floating worlds and that they only exist in theaters or on DVDs or streaming Netflix. So, listeners, we want to know, first of all, if you saw any of these movies, and I think, you know, there's another Superman. What's that one called? Man of Steel. That comes.
Yes.
That's the next one. And then there's, I mean, there's just endless. I mean, partly it's a way to make money in these movies. You can have big booms and explosions that don't necessarily need translation. But with a 49-year-old series like Star Trek, first show in 1964, I believe, it is its own universe. I mean, it is. It's been in existence for a long time.
Yeah, it was. It was 1966.
66.
And while I was watching this, I was thinking just how long that is, and the fact that this big, you know, summer blockbuster is making references to things that were, you know, happening in the late 60s. It is a really funny kind of longevity. It goes without saying that the vast audience that's filling the theaters wasn't born then and wasn't really that close to being born then.
Right.
And yet it's that universe, that kind of non-tactile Star Trek universe that's been floating along all this time is still there.
So and, I mean, it still exists somehow.
Yeah.
We want to know what you think. 206-543-5869. Hi, Anne in Seattle. You saw this new movie?
Yes, yes. I loved the original series, and I loved the first movie reboot. And this movie was horrible in almost every dimension.
Okay, without spoiling it, yeah.
I won't do any spoilers, but like the opening scene on the planet where there's a volcano, everything about it made no sense. What Kirk and McCoy were doing made no sense. What Spock was doing made no sense. And the solution was stupid. And after that, Uhura, who is an officer, starts being pouty and sulky, and she gives Spock the silent treatment. I thought, their relationship is being played for laughs, and it was just really embarrassing. Hmm.
And so this violated the Star Trek universe that you like.
No, it wasn't that it violated the Star Trek universe. It was that everything they did was stupid.
Ah, okay, so stupid. That's it.
It just didn't come up to the level.
All of the fights, all of the fist fights, all of the gun fights, all of the spear throwing, all of the ship battles made no sense physically.
Are you telling me I shouldn't see it even if I love Benedict Cumberbatch?
Yes. Yeah, okay. And he overacts so badly. The scenery chewing, I was embarrassed for him, and I love him.
Wow. Okay, thanks for that, Pan. And Lance agrees with you. He says this movie was a real disappointment for us longtime Trekkers, as opposed to Trekkies. The movie was a bunch of cliches with no real quality story writing, a rehash of tired old storylines. Hmm. Well, maybe that's a different way of saying the tired old storyline is referencing to a past universe.
I think I even had a little more fun with the movie than those folks did.
Well, Anne surely didn't like it.
Yeah, even with my reservations about the kind of cannibalizing of itself that it's doing, I still thought it was kind of fun for a while, at least.
You've piqued the ire of many longtime Star Trek fans, so let's bring some more folks into our conversation. From Everett, Charles joins us, and you haven't seen this film yet, Charles.
I actually haven't seen the film, and I'm kind of excited to see it in a much more reasonably priced matinee, hopefully.
Yeah.
And a couple of folks already just kind of spoiled it for me with their opinions of the film. But what my point was, I guess, that they're trying to satisfy two different audiences or demographics here. Some of us are the serious Trekkies. I remember watching Trek as a kindergartner, juxtaposed with images of the Vietnam War and, of course, by Timmy and Lassie and a couple other things. And Trek was very enchanting, not just because of the multicultural aspects, the diversity that was in the cast, the fact that, you know, the fact that there was all this techno stuff, much of which you look at now is very, very cheesy in an effects way. But what really enchanted me was the principles and the philosophies then, especially next to the Vietnam War, which were things like we had done away with war. The one I loved the most was when asked how much money they make, one of the characters once said, well, we don't work for money anymore. We work to better ourselves. So while we have so much of the technology, a lot of the philosophy that Gene Roddenberry was talking about, the social issues that he addressed in the original series, they're very much alive and very much very, very huge now. So I like the references that I'm hearing about to some of the old stuff. That's for us old-time Trekkies, I would think, who are very maybe critical and in some ways judgmental because we're Trekkies. But then the other stuff is, you know, that's the way movies are made now, whether it's Iron Man or Mission This or whatever. It's, you know, there's a lot of action, a lot of, you know, falling off the precipice. I've heard mixed reviews from even Trekkies about whether or not the whole romance thing with her and Spock is liked. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I don't think they should deal with it too much in the storylines, but I am looking forward to it. You know, they have to go for multiple audiences now, and those are not just not just the real Trekkie types. And anybody that wants to know about that should watch that documentary Trek Nation that Roddenberry's son did.
Ah, wow. Well, thank you for that. That was the very good analysis of the whole thing. We have a lot of callers.
I hope he calls back after he sees it because I'm
curious. Yeah, now you want to know what you think. Okay, Charles, send us an email with your review. Hi, Tristan in Woodinville. You saw the film and you liked it.
Yes, and I will point out that you don't have to have been alive when Star Trek first aired to have seen it all. It was a family thing for me as a kid. I've seen all of the original series, all of Next Generation, all of DS9, and most of the other two series that aired. I'm not to the degree that I read the specs or speak Klingon, but I'm well-versed in the universe, and I loved it. I thought it was great. I really like what J.J. Abrams is doing with both referencing the original canon and yet putting a twist on it that makes it fresh and different, and how he's upending some of what was there before.
Great. Thanks for your call. We're sort of talking about the new Star Trek movie, but we're talking more about that idea of whether these are for people who are already well-versed in a universe that was created 40-some years ago.
And, I mean, as she was saying, absolutely, you do not have to have been born then to have caught, you know, the miracle of home video means that you can engorged yourself on all of this stuff, you know, in a relatively recent amount of time and become a full-time Trekker. I agree with what Charles was saying about how, you know, the original show was very progressive and certainly didn't always succeed at it, but it certainly intended to be and had some lots of thoughtful ideas going on, including, to go to the Vietnam point, one of their prime directives was that this Enterprise would not mess around with any other planet, would not change the course, you know, would not put a footprint there that would alter the destiny of another people.
Right. They weren't colonialists, in other words.
It was very, anti-colonial was one of the guiding things about the show and the criticism of that. And I think that I just feel like this last movie is the one where you lost a lot of that stuff. Gets paid lip service. In fact, in that opening sequence that one caller was talking about, that particular prime directive is very much invoked, and it's at the heart of a bunch of dominoes that fall thereafter. And you can see them kind of going in that direction, but I still feel like it floats away in the absolute need to let everybody know that, yes, we remember all these things about Tribbles, and, you know.
Because maybe they don't want to let themselves in for being slammed by people who do love the lore.
Right. There's a real awareness of that, of the nation that's out there, you know, waiting to pounce on things. But I think, well, this is for me, not for the last caller, I suppose, who really liked it. But for me, a little bit of those winks to the audience, that's great. But when the whole thing becomes like the suspended sort of orgy of one-liners and so on, then it starts to evanesce.
I'm going to bring in one last caller in this segment, Robin in Georgetown. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I wanted to say that, you know, you guys are making much of the references, the continual references to the previous stories in the Star Trek universe. And I was going to say that I think that that actually allows you to become more immersed in the world. I actually really like that because it makes me feel like I'm a part of that universe that they're in.
Have you seen this movie?
I have seen this movie, and I actually enjoyed the references. I enjoyed the references in the first new Star Trek movie. And I'm not an avid watcher of the previous Star Trek shows, but I have seen some of them, and I've been exposed to a lot of the references and the culture. So, I mean, I guess I would say, in the real world, there are a lot of big events that we all share an understanding of, we're all aware of, and we don't continually sort of re-explain those to each other. We make references to them. And so when a movie does that, it makes me feel like I'm along for the ride.
Yeah, I actually agree with that as a principle, and it does make you feel like there is this larger world going on. It makes us feel a part of it. Lord of the Rings did that exactly.
Yes.
All these references to things that you didn't even know what they were. And in this case, for me, the balance has tipped over so that that has become dominant. That's not like a thing that runs alongside it, and you enjoy that and gives you the sense of the world. It has taken over.
Wow. Like a triffid. Robert, a very thought-provoking conversation, and now you make me want to see this movie, which, you know, there's a lot of things to see, plus the film festival, Seattle International Film Festival, is got a big weekend. We'll talk more about that next week.
Okay. Good.
Robert Horton's a film critic, longtime KUOW contributor. You find him in the Everett Herald and at his blog, The Crop Duster. Robert also hosts Magic Lantern, a monthly series of discussions on cinema at the Fry Art Museum. And he's just all over the place, including here on Wednesdays. This is Wednesday. Thanks for being here.
Thanks,
this
Marcy.
Is KUOW.
Support for KUOW comes from Broadway at the Paramount, presenting Fela, celebrating the music of a man who introduced modern African music to a generation and helped shape the politics of a continent. Running May 28th through June 2nd at the Paramount Theater. Tickets and information at stgpresents.org.
Julia Sweeney is a comedian, actress, and author. She was on Saturday Night Live for 4 seasons in the early 90s. Her new book of essays is called If It's Not One Thing, It's Your Mother. She talks with Ross Reynolds today at 12:40.
Support for KUOW comes from GET, Washington's guaranteed education tuition program, helping parents plan and save for college with flexible options, a nationwide choice of colleges, and backed by the state of Washington. Information and enrollment online at get.wa.gov.
48 degrees with gray skies in Seattle. Today's high temperature expected to be around 58, showers likely, maybe a thunderstorm after noon. Tonight, the low down around 47 with showers and wind 7 to 13 miles an hour.
From 94.9 KUOW Seattle, I'm Marcy Silman. Well, there was a tent, there were videos, there was a national press, and yes, it was all in Redmond where Microsoft unveiled the newest version of Xbox yesterday. Our regular technology commentator, Todd Bishop, co-founder and national editor of GeekWire, was there.
I was in the tent.
You were the big tent.
It had its own Twitter account. The tent was so popular.
That's kind of hard to believe. How many folks were stuffed in there watching this?
I'd say there were at least a few hundred. It was press from around the world. Microsoft flew in reporters from, you know, Asia and Europe, and they really made a big splash of it.
Okay, so this is now the Xbox One. It's like the One Ring we were talking about, Lord of the Rings. This is it. This is supposed to replace everything, right?
That is the idea behind the name of Xbox One. It immediately caused confusion for me because we refer to the original Xbox, the one that came out in 2001, as the Xbox One. But this is the machine to rule them all.
Well, not quite, because you still have to have a television set and a cable, right?
That's right. So the big deal, or one of the big things with this new console, which is coming out later this year at
they just showed it to you. They didn't sell it to you.
No, they didn't sell it. It's coming out later this year at a price yet to be announced. So we don't even know that yet. But one of the key things is the integration with live TV.
Mm.
Microsoft will have a program guide on screen that you'll use to find and switch among channels from the Xbox, just as you do from your cable normally. Now, you still will need a cable box and a cable subscription. So Microsoft is essentially trying to provide a layer on top of the existing infrastructure so that really all you have to do is turn on your Xbox. That's what they're shooting for. They're trying to preempt all those other providers.
Okay, so let's walk back a second. Microsoft needed to do something. We talked about this a couple weeks ago when you were last in, because people really don't use devices, consoles for games so much anymore.
That's right. Tablets and smartphones have really become some of the dominant ways of playing games. Now, Microsoft actually provided some statistics last week contending that consoles still are the primary way that people play games. But clearly the usage of consoles to play games has been chipped away at by tablets and smartphones.
And should you use your Xbox 360 for games, you cannot do it with the new Xbox One.
That was one of the big catches yesterday. In this new hardware, they're going to be shifting to a new processor architecture. They're shifting, if the people are going to get geeky about it, they're shifting from PowerPC to x86 processors. So the kinds of chips that are in your computer on a day-to-day basis. And in doing that, Xbox 360 games will not be able to be played on the new Xbox One. So in other words, the Xbox One is not backward compatible, is the phrase.
So then you still, if you have all those games, you still need the Xbox 360.
That's right. So you could end up with, if you there will be people out there, the hardcore
boxes.
Gamers, that will just be adding one more box to the shelf, not replacing one with the Xbox One.
But essentially, we need to think about Xbox. It's not a gaming system anymore.
It's not. And in fact, they've stopped referring to it as a video game console. This is an entertainment machine that also happens to play games. That really is the way they're doing it. Now, that's a risk for Microsoft, because the hardcore gamers are the ones who have driven the Xbox over the years. The success of the original Halo for the first Xbox was really the key to Microsoft's entry into this entire market. So by broadening this into more of a general purpose entertainment device, there is the risk that they could alienate those folks.
Now, how important is this Xbox One to Microsoft's overall financial health?
Long-term, financially, Xbox does not contribute as much, not nearly as much as things like Office and Windows right now. But from a strategic standpoint, the context for this launch is Windows Phone is in the single digits. Windows 8 is struggling a bit out of the gate. Microsoft has to refresh it, as we've talked about it in the past. So in that context, Xbox is actually a success story for Microsoft in the consumer realm. They've led the U.S. console market for more than 2 years straight now over the PS3 and the Wii. They need to continue building on that to have that strategic stronghold in the living room with the Xbox.
So if we step aside from game consoles and talk about generic entertainment centers or whatever the word is, who is Microsoft competing with?
Just about everybody. So you have Google, Apple, and there are even reports that none other than our hometown company here, Amazon, is planning to come out with its own streaming video device for the living room. So just about every big tech company has some kind of interest in and designs on the living room at this point.
So the idea is at some point all those weird remote gadgets that we use will all be repackaged into one. We're going to sit down at in front of the large screen television set, hit the Xbox One or whatever, and...
Well, actually, if you do it the way Microsoft would like you to do it,
we clap our hands.
Well, you're not going to be, that's sort of the clapper version of it. In fact, you will say, Xbox, and address. You already do that with the Kinect sensor now, and the new version of the Kinect sensor, which is both visually sensing and audibly sensing, that will be shipping with every single one of these new Xbox Ones. So. In fact, the demo that they gave on stage yesterday was entirely voice commands. They said, switch among different programs, and the console did it. It wasn't clear how much of that was actually live working code versus a little stagecraft.
Yes.
But that is the idea, to get you away from a handheld controller if you want. Now, the new controller is actually very nice,
you
too.
You tried it. You got to try it. So it's better than the old one.
And the old one is nice. I like the Xbox 360 controller. If people out there have it, they know there's a battery pack right smack on the back of it. And if you play games for a long time, it actually makes it a little hard. Microsoft has reoriented that in the new controller for the Xbox One. I got to play with it a little bit yesterday. I actually like it even better than the Xbox 360 controller. So that is a strong point for Microsoft.
Well, that's good, because you're going to need them both when you have game systems. The other thing that's going to be integrated, or theoretically is integrated into this new Xbox One, is Skype.
That's right. Now, this is a direct result of Microsoft's acquisition of Skype a couple years ago for more than $8 billion. I love the line on the internet. I don't know why Microsoft bought Skype for $8 billion. They could have just downloaded it for free. That's one of my favorite lines. A little tech humor there for you. But yes, finally, we will be seeing Skype chatting integrated into Xbox Live.
But you didn't see it.
No. Well, they showed they showed it from stage. It was not clear if it was actual working code. It could have been a little bit of demo magic that they were working behind the scenes.
So overall, I mean, you held the controller, you saw a demo. I know on GeekWire you said it wasn't really as pretty as you thought it should be.
The actual console hardware, it's a little bland.
It's a big black box.
Yeah, that's the other joke going around is that Sony is going to be suing Microsoft for ripping off the designs for the original Betamax.
I know this isn't on the market. We don't even know how much it's going to cost. Nobody has their prototype to try. So I this is an unfair question, but I'll ask you anyways. How would you assess this?
Yeah, I think this is exactly what Microsoft needed to do. If people could have sat down and scripted out exactly what Microsoft was going to do, I think this is it. The one big thing that it's missing is DVR capability, so digital video recording. This is not a...
You can't do that.
You can't do that. So you can watch live TV, but you cannot record programs, which many people do. There are people out there who couldn't watch TV anymore if they didn't have a DVR.
Wow.
So that is a huge hole that they're probably going to need to fill down the road. The problem is the hard drive is only 500 gigs. Only when you're talking about saving media, saving game content.
More.
Now they are connecting it very tightly with quote the cloud, as they call it, which basically means remote data centers accessed over the internet, and so that does increase the storage capability. But still, there's a need to have ample local storage on your actual hardware, and for that DVR, you would need a lot.
Well, we'll all be waiting and watching. I would guess before Christmas, Xbox Ones will be available.
Oh, absolutely. If it's not out before Christmas, then they've missed a schedule.
Let's go to a program that you wrote about and I don't get at all. Amazon is launching something called Kindle Worlds.
Yes. So this is a new fan fiction program that Amazon has come up with Kindle. What was the name of the character that you were talking about with Robert, your favorite from one of the PBS programs?
Oh, Benedict Cumberbatch. Well, that's a real person.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah, that's his natural name.
Say you wanted to take his character from the show that you were mentioning, which I don't happen to watch.
Sherlock,
and write your own fiction around him. A lot of people do that, in fact. People spend time on this. They call it fan fiction. And Amazon this morning came out with a new program, as you said, called Kindle Worlds, where they will go to the original content creators, license that content in order to give independent authors the rights to create basically modifications of it, fan fiction that uses the characters and the intellectual property from those worlds to create new literary works, if you can call it literary.
And then I would subscribe to Kindle World so that I would then have the right to publish my fan fiction.
So if you were the author, you would submit it to Amazon.
Uh-huh.
Amazon would assess it, determine whether it met the criteria, and determine whether it went too far or whether it was okay. No pornography allowed, no going too far with the characters, and then publish it in the Kindle store for others to buy. And then give the author of the fan fiction, the person who's adapting the original work, a certain percentage, around 30% royalty.
How many people do this?
A lot.
Really?
A lot. In a certain culture, especially when you start looking at comic books and people who are really into Joss Whedon or something like
right.
that. This is fan fiction, very popular. Now, it's kind of a nerd activity, and I say that being one myself, but it is very much a part of the culture.
So let me just walk me through this one more time. So perhaps I loved Joss Whedon.
Yes.
And I would and should Joss Whedon sign an agreement with Amazon.
That's
Amazon,
right.
I mean, he hasn't yet signed any
no.
agreement. Amazon would approach him or somebody like him and ask him to
for
the rights, and then let me know via Kindle Worlds that I could create my own Buffy stories, and then I would submit the Buffy story back to Amazon's Kindle Worlds, who would then
sell it.
And would I get some money, and Joss would get his cut.
Exactly. Joss would probably get his cut up front.
I would hope he gets a bigger cut than me. It's his character.
Yes.
Wow. And this is, I'm sorry, now I'm old, but this is something that just seems, people spend time doing this.
They do.
Okay.
And to give you a sense for the types of things that they do, one of the main objections to this program first thing this morning was that there is no pornography allowed. So just without going any further, right. that gives you a sense for some of the types of fan fiction that came.
Well, too bad that Jane Austen's not still alive, because
exactly.
All those vampire takeoffs on Jane Austen she could be getting a posthumous cut.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm going to move on with Amazon, because last night the Seattle Design Review Board had mixed reactions to the NBBJ architecture firm's plans for the new, it's not the Kindle world, it's the new Amazon world in sort of the edge of downtown Seattle. They want to build biospheres.
That's right. This was a new design that Amazon sort of sprung on people for the campus that it's planning right there in the Denny Triangle on the northern edge of downtown Seattle, which is, you know, really a potentially fantastic thing for the city overall, that you're
right.
seeing this kind of urban infill development. I know there's lots of controversy around that, and I don't want to dive into that.
This is 6th and Lenora.
That's right.
So it's right sort of two blocks from the Cinerama, where you might have seen Star Trek Into Darkness.
Right.
I'm not sure what's playing there, but two blocks away. So this was, it's not just three giant glass domes. There's a building, like a regular building.
Right. And this is just one of the three blocks that Amazon will be eventually developing down there. But you're right. They are biodomes, essentially buildings that are glass encased that house trees and other living things.
And as I understand it, it's not just a random tree. These are sort of mountain climate. So it's going to be totally climate controlled. They're things that you might find in the Cascade or Olympic Mountains.
That's right. And so this was it's really going to be a fascinating addition, assuming it goes through, to that part of the city. You know, Apple has its spaceship that it's developing down in California. It's that giant circular facility that,
right.
that Steve Jobs, in one of his last public appearances, compared to a giant spaceship landing in the middle of an orchard. So you've kind of got Amazon and Apple one-upping each other here with their futuristic designs.
Well, I know that when they presented it to the Design Review Board last night, they also presented a list of other glass enclosed. I mean, and we're not just talking conservatory in the Volunteer Park, Capitol Hill, but actual buildings. One of the objections is that there's more trees in the biodomes than the public plaza that they're also building.
Right. That which is a bit of a part of the way that this particular development could be controversial is that these are buildings. And
for their workers.
That's right. Whereas other parts of the campus would be more public and open for people to at least walk through.
A last question. This big complex is in addition to or
yes.
replacing what they are building down in the South Lake Union?
From everything we've been able to pick so far, it is in addition to the South Lake Union complex. Amazon, if you look at their overall employment, now it includes warehouse workers
sure.
around the country, but if you look at their overall employment, they should surpass Microsoft in global employment this year with more than 90,000 people. And that's up from, you know, 60,000 just a couple years ago. So it's crazy how fast they've been growing.
Well, Amazon, your one-stop shop for buying a book, writing fan fiction, or enjoying a biodome. Todd, it's great to have you in here. Todd Bishop is co-founder and national editor of GeekWire, an independent tech news site that's based in Seattle. We talked about the new Xbox One, Amazon's biodomes, and Kindle Worlds. I'm going to have to check that out. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Marcy.
Our show is produced by Katie Sewell, Jason Pagano, and Amina Al-Sadi. Jack Walter is helming the show right now. I'm Marcy Silman. Join us again tomorrow at 9 for a weekday on KUOW.
You're tuned to KUOW 94.9 News and Information. 10:59.
On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Jennifer Gilmore. Her new novel, The Mothers, is based on the experiences she and her husband had trying to adopt a baby. They gave up on international adoption and pursued open adoption in the U.S., but ran into all kinds of obstacles as well as a scam or two. Join us.
Tonight at 8 o'clock on KUOW2, our second program service.
Support for KUOW comes from the Whatcom Museum's Lightcatcher Galleries in Bellingham, featuring Jim Olson, Art in Architecture, a retrospective of the Seattle architect whose work includes the design of the Lightcatcher Galleries. Open through June 9th. Details about the exhibition at whatcommuseum.org.
This is KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.